Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer.
Thanks for downloading this episode of Scuffed. We now have official rosters for the Olympic qualifying tournament that kicks off for the U.S. on Thursday in what could very well be the decisive match against Costa Rica. You see, the best U.S. players are getting knocked out of Champions League right now, so we're fielding a B2C U23 team coached by a man, Jason Kreis, who has yet to demonstrate proficiency in the job. Mexico's squad is A-. We're in a group with Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, and Mexico in order. We don't want to roll into a must-win versus Mexico to get out of the group, so we got to beat Costa Rica, and Costa Rica is thinking they got to beat us because they are seeing the same thing in the future. So it's going to be the first game with real stakes in a while. And I got to say, for me, it's easier to map out American failure than success. Greg may disagree. I'll let him talk at long last.
I will somewhat disagree. I feel like what we've got here, given the available players and who is, you know, finally selected, is sort of just a case of a fan base, the supporters effectively flying blind. I think, you know, had the selections been a little different, we could have easily predicted, you know, the setup and some of the tactics. And we could have had this reasonable expectations for like what the baseline performance would be. And there's a real comfort to sort of that predictability and kind of a discomfort to what I think is now just a very uncertain picture, as you've kind of laid out. And, you know, nature just abhors a vacuum and all that. So I think, you know, this comfort is then compounded by the fact that so much American U23 talent is out there on display, like you said, playing in Champions League matches, not necessarily successfully, but they're out there in the Champions League. So that, you know, when these names come out on this roster, it just can't help but feel a little bit underwhelming.
Yeah. Okay. Always reasonable, always meticulous, Greg Velasquez. I should note, I'm on vacation, and behind me is an apartment full of my progeny. And there's no quiet place except for me to be outside on the porch. And there will be some ambient noise in the background. I hope that it just adds to the charm of the
episode. Yeah, I was going to say, we're actually just going to let the mics run for about 40 minutes after this. So you can just let it play as this relaxing, peaceful background noise.
Yeah, that's right. So here's the roster. Here's the U23 roster announced yesterday. No big surprise.
Was it announced yesterday?
Well, because it was leaked. For those interested in inside baseball, it was leaked by CONCACAF. CONCACAF has a record of leaking these things, I guess, earlier in the week. The goalkeepers are Marcinkowski, David Freese. No, not David Freese. I always
Matt,
say that.
Matt Freese.
I am a closet baseball fan at one point in my life. Matt Freese and David Ochoa. Fullbacks are Sam Vines, Aaron Herrera, and Julian Araujo. Center backs are Mauricio Pineda, Henry Kessler, and Justin Glad. The midfield is Johnny Cardoso, Jackson Ewell, Anders Perea, Hassani Dotson, and Georgi Mihailovic. The wings, I guess we have them categorized this way, would be Sebastian Saucedo, Ulianes, Jonathan Lewis, and Benji Michel. And then the forwards, the strikers, are Jesus Ferreira and Sebastian Soto. So we've sort of been over this before. I mean, we talked about a lot of these guys in the last episode, but here are some things I'd like to say, and then you can jump in. The player pool is fine. Like we said, our first choice U23s, we both said it already, the first choice U23s are in Europe. They're busy. That is not as true of Costa Rica and Mexico. Although Mexico is missing a few players, including Edson Alvarez, still alive in the Europa League. Big picture, it's not like this isn't some calamity if we don't do well in the tournament. I think it bears mentioning. However, I don't think it's quite right to say, welp, who cares about Olympic qualifying? Because I think this is a chance for the U.S. under Berhalter to get a job done in a tough situation. And I'm not sure we've seen that from Berhalter yet, or at least in the Berhalter regime. And it's not like this task is impossible. You know, it's possible for us to get a result against Costa Rica and, you know, scratch out a result against Mexico. That's not, like, ridiculous to conceive of. So this is a test of the competence of the program for me. And Kreis is the main player, but Berhalter is the, you know, he's the godhead.
Yeah, and I agree with that for the most part. I've kind of said out loud already, like, who cares if we qualify? And I guess I should qualify that. And I totally do see it as a test, and it's a good kind of test in that it's definitely not a gimme, because we've seen some gimmies over the last 18 months with games the U.S. have played. You know, if we don't get our tactics right in these games, we will fail. If the players don't perform well, we will fail. So the who cares angle for me is that the failure isn't devastating in like a big picture sense to the long term goals of the men's team qualifying and hopefully advancing in the World Cup. The failures here would just be localized. Like, we could say, all right, well, such and such a player, just, you know, if they can't hack it against Costa Rica's domestic U23 team, then maybe they're not really in the picture. They shouldn't be as close to the senior national team for the U.S. as maybe we thought they were going into the tournament. Because there are a few guys on this list who at the moment are probably penciled in for, you know, decent contributions for the senior team come World Cup qualifying. And a lot of them remain, just like a lot of the, even the players not here, they remain untested in real competition for the men's right. national team. So for me, it's not necessarily like who, it shouldn't be who cares, but it's going to be, I think it, for me, the cares is just more local on an individual basis than it is like not qualifying is a huge sign that the program is failing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. There are like fringe, there are definitely players here who are fringe elements in a first choice U23. Like, I mean, Ferreira might be even better than that. Yanez is, I think, on the fringe, has shown himself to be on the fringe in Berhalter's mind, at least. There are others I'm not thinking of right off the top of my head.
Well, and when you say fringe of a first choice U23, that is synonymous with fringe for the senior 23 at this point, because those teams are largely the same.
That's what I meant. Senior 23. Okay. Senior 23. Yeah.
But again, it you may as well be saying the same thing. First choice U23 and senior 23.
Yeah. Okay. So a note here, Atlanta not releasing players while their CONCACAF Champions League opponent, Alajuelense, am I saying that correctly? In Costa Rica, very much is. So Alajuelense is releasing players.
And they play each other in the CONCACAF Champions League coming up?
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Really puts the U.S. at a disadvantage. Not having Miles Robinson at center back is a big setback for Jason Kreiss. Bless his little heart. And Alajuelense is releasing 7 players for this tournament. 7 of the 20 players on this Costa Rica roster are from that club, which is running away with the Costa Rican League Clausura.
And they all play. They're not like buried deep down on the bench. Like almost like everyone I was looking at on this team for Costa Rica is a regular professional player getting regular minutes. So those guys for Alajuelense are playing. So it's kind of cool that they're giving those players up. And should Costa Rica beat us out, or maybe U.S. and Costa Rica advance, let's say that, in my little hypothetical, and Costa Rica wins their semifinal match to qualify for the Olympics, I hope all of those players leave immediately after the semifinal to go back to their club for CCL, and Costa Rica plays the final with like 9 guys.
Yeah, that'd be funny. Yeah, and it's, and I gotta say, this is a mark in the book against you, Carlos Bocanegra, unless you come on this show and explain yourself.
Who's Bocanegra's counterpart at Alajuelense?
I don't know. I didn't do that research. But, I mean, it's a striking contrast, really. And Robinson is a big loss, I think. Less so Bello and the Brooks Lennon, but, you know, be nice to have those pieces to play with, too. So, in that vein, I think we're fine at fullback, and I like Ferreira at striker. And even in Robinson's absence, I don't think the center backs are the biggest problem. Kessler, Pineda, and Glad are competent Major League Soccer center backs. They're not awesome, and they're not terrible. The broader concern is, now, if you're getting a sense that there's some gloom and doom here, the broader concern is this isn't a team yet, you know? I guess it goes back to the unknown that you were talking about at the top of the episode. By any measure, and everyone's out of season. Like, nobody on this U.S. squad has played much recently. Except for Ferreira's masterclass on February 1st against Trinidad and Tobago.
It's catapulted him into the number one U.S. striker position.
Yeah, right. So, like, we got a bunch of guys who haven't been playing soccer, playing on a team that has never really established itself as a team. The last time they played was in the Canary Islands in that tournament with Brazil and some club in Tenerife, and they didn't look great. You know, they didn't look like a coherent side, which is understandable at the time. And then COVID sort of took away any opportunity to bring cohesion to the group, and here we are. By contrast, Costa Rica's, you know, there's a solid chance that they could put out a four-man back line entirely of players from Alajuelense. Like they're,
who are in mid-season.
They're
they've been playing games regularly since January.
Together. Playing together on the field. So that's going to be a challenge, I think. For me, the largest specific concern is the attack lacks creativity. There's been a lot of talk about this on Twitter. We have an abundance of defensive mindedness in our midfield selections, and our two most dangerous players, to my mind, Salcedo and Yanez, haven't played but 21 minutes in 2021. 21 minutes for Salcedo, zero for Yanez.
Yeah, and honestly, even that number is kind of sugar-coated. Those 21 minutes for Salcedo actually stretch all the way back to mid-August with Pumas, where he's been dealing with various injuries. Yanez has like 100 scattered minutes if you want to go back further in his harebrained loan. But like you said, none of those are in 2021, and those 100 minutes represent the sum total of first division minutes in his entire club career. I think he has more U.S. men's national team senior minutes than he does club minutes.
Yeah.
And again, this all goes back to this bit about us, you know, as followers, at least flying totally blind. Since we can't see what Christ is seeing, he had him in January, a lot of these guys in January for 3 or 4 weeks. And now he had him in Guadalajara for 3 weeks. So he's seen a lot of things that we haven't seen. We are totally blind. And I just don't know that, you know, coach Jason Christ inspires a ton of confidence in the fan base, because we're kind of blind on what he can do as a coach. He hasn't been a head coach in, was it Orlando? Was that his last stop? What was his last stop?
I believe it was Orlando, although I'm not a close follower of his career.
All right. Someone will correct us.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're totally blind. Giannis and Salcedo, if those are our creative guys, have barely played. You can honestly throw Sebastian Soto into that mix as well, as one of our choices as a nine. He's been, you know, his stop at Telstar for the Dutch second division was sort of his only professional go in the last year.
And that was a productive stop, you know, for sure.
Sure. But I mean, we wouldn't be super excited if we had a USL guy on here unless it was Jose Gallego. So it's clear that like a lot of our attacking pieces, we're taking on faith that they're performing in camp, which I'm mostly fine with doing. You know how I feel about first team minutes as the end all be all. So I'm glad that we're at least hopefully evaluating the guys, you know, on their face on how they play in camp. That matters to me. We just don't know. I mean, we just can't really say anything about it because we've never seen them.
Yeah.
In the same, like you were saying, the center midfield lacking creativity, it's the same thing there. We have no idea where it's going to come from. That doesn't mean it won't exist. It's just, I think in our minds, Tessman and Williamson would have been the very obvious sort of two-way center mids who can give you that sort of enough defensive ball-winning bite, but can also drive a game forward. We've seen that in glimpses with Tessman, and Williamson did a nice job with it at Portland. When those guys aren't named onto the roster, you know, we immediately kind of are just left in this cloud of uncertainty. So we bring four defensive mids and we have a tucked in left wing as our other center mid. We're basically running eightless, and there's just we don't have any real answers there. We don't have any rock to sort of ground ourselves on or our expectations on. There's nothing to get our bearings, and this malaise sort of sets in.
Yeah. I mean, I could see if Pomacall were on this roster, I would say to myself, okay, Pomacall could take the ball from one of the center backs, turn and dribble a little bit and create some space and get things moving a little bit. But I don't see anybody who kind of has that I've seen has that ability on this roster. And it's not like I got to be clear. It's not like I'm some huge Eric Williamson fan or even Tanner Tessman. I mean, they seem like promising players. I'm not sure they totally change the complexion of this problem for us either.
No, I agree. And I think the issue here is just without those guys, it just becomes really difficult to map this roster, I think, on what our expectations were based on how the senior team has played over the last several windows. So when you look at this group and then you think about what we've seen dating back to January 2020, there aren't necessarily these one-to-one analogs, certainly in center midfield. So maybe we can get into some of the possibilities that we might see instead.
Yeah, please. Yeah, go for it.
Well, so we're talking about how we could actually attack with this group. And even though there is this uncertainty, and I'm not saying like you should just take it on faith that we'll definitely do well, I just don't think we should resign ourselves to it being unworkable or unmanageable. Like, I think there are some ways you could set this up. And you're just going to put a lot of the emphasis on, it's going to be these guys' time to shine. It's going to be the wingers and Jesus Ferreira. It's not going to come from Hassani Dotson. It's not going to come from Andres Pereja. So for me, I think we could actually see a slight tweak to how our tactics work from the senior team. Mostly the same principles, just to sort of shift in the responsibilities of positional profiles, which Berhalter is certainly no not afraid of doing that. And I would imagine Kreis has that flexibility as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think what I'm convincing myself of is that we're going to see like a 3-2-5 in possession, which is something Berhalter's trotted out a lot. It's not quite what he's been doing necessarily with the senior team, but it's not far off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see Sam Vines playing. It's going to be asymmetrical. I think we might see an asymmetrical setup where Sam Vines plays as a stay-home, more of a stay-home left back, which, again, we've seen that plenty in Berhalter's era. And we we have Jonathan Lewis as sort of a sideline-hugging left wing on that side.
Okay, yeah.
And what that does is our central midfield then becomes – our central midfield is Georgi Mihailovic, Jackson Ewell, and Johnny Cardoso is kind of what I'm projecting.
Yeah.
But now, because we have these three stay-home players, we basically leave Cardoso and Ewell sitting in front of them as like the double pivot.
Yep.
Which we've done a lot. This kind of goes back to 2019 and setup we ran back then. And Mihailovic steps up into the band of five in the attack and plays as the left-sided number 10.
And then we have like Ulianez or one of the other wingers. Please excuse the background noise. Ulianez or one of the other wingers tucking in from the right as the other sort of.
Exactly. So Uli comes in as the right-sided number 10 in that half space, and the right back overlaps and becomes the sideline hugging wide player out there. I assume it'll be Herrera, but it could just as easily be Araujo. They would both be comfortable in that role.
Yeah.
So I get there because at that point the roster construction makes sense. You brought four defensive mids because that's two. That's a starter and a backup for each of the two guys in the double pivot. Cardoso. Mm-hmm. And Ewell might be the starters. Pereja and Dotson could fill in for them. And now you have this. It becomes sort of a coherent group.
Yeah.
And Mihailovic as the 10 has a back. Sebastian Salcedo can also play that exact role. He likes to play as a wide left player who's very comfortable coming into central midfield. We saw that way back in November 2019 in that game against Brazil. He was, for me, the most impressive player for us in that game.
Yeah, he was. Definitely. I definitely agree with that. So yeah, that's a way to see it sort of on paper. That kind of makes sense. It's just even trying to think about that, and we'll get into Costa Rica as the opponent for this really important first game. But it's just hard to see that clicking unless. So I have a couple possibilities, and they're of the more mystical variety, as you may not be surprised. Uli, three possibilities to solve our attack. Uli has just a magical preparation in training this week and next, and then a breakout magical tournament. Like, he really becomes the player we want him to be. He turns the corner, as we like to say on the Scuff podcast lately. Or Sebastian Salcedo does that. Or Ferreira gets in the kitchen and cooks the way he did against Trinidad on the 1st of February. He can do it against weak opposition, but this is not going to be weak opposition. I think it's going to be a lot tougher than that team we played against on February 1st from Trinidad and Tobago. Definitely tougher than that. And
it will. But Jesus Ferreira did a similarly effective job to less spectacular end product a year ago against a Costa Rica senior team. So
that's
we've
true.
Seen him do it against Costa Rica, it be incredibly effective in the role he was asked to play. And it's that thing where it's not impossible. It's not like we're doomed to failure with Ferreira playing that role. I think it can work. It's just we have very little data to back any of it up.
Yeah. And we just don't have like a pattern of players coming into a camp and then coming out and looking like a well-oiled machine in the last, you know, 2.5 years or whatever it's been. I don't think we've seen that yet. And this seems like a bigger challenge than most to provide that. So even, you know, even if Ferreira is dropping in and doing all kinds of wonderful stuff, dropping in deep, he needs the wingers to really know their roles and run off of him and combine with him. And, you know, we sure didn't see that in the senior European camp in November. And, you know, we definitely didn't see it in that Canary Islands tournament way back pre-pandemic. So should we talk about... go ahead.
Well, and just the other thing is, you know, it doesn't feel like there's a good plan B to this group. So even if that's how we go, even if that's how we play, and I don't know for sure it will be, we might go straight, like seriously just paste these players onto the senior team's tactics from the Wales game or whatever. Maybe that's what it's supposed to look like, and we just can't see how those players will perform those roles, but Kreis and Berhalter see it. I don't know. But it's hard to envision, like, okay, well, if that's not working, what else do we have? We don't have a lot of these other, like, we aren't going to be like, oh, well, we'll just rely on Jonathan Lewis to do people one-on-one and, you know, get the, it's very much going to have to be like team manufactured goals. And if a one or two of the guys isn't up for the challenge, like it feels like the whole thing will fall apart. It doesn't feel like we're going to have this like set piece masterclass or guys who can just dominate, you know, in other facets of the game.
Yeah. And I this is probably a good time to bring up the U23s not called that Matt Doyle posted. You know, he posted a roster of guys who weren't called into this camp, and he was like, these guys would stomp the current roster.
I didn't see that. That's awesome.
I think he said his verb was stuff. So okay. Stomp is a little bit of editorializing by me, but same basic idea. And that's you know, Jeremy Abobase up top, kind of maybe the biggest snub of the whole roster. Caden Clark, Cade Cowell. I mean, who knows? Abobase is among the major snubs, if you want to categorize snubs. And then Williamson and Pomacall and Sands as your midfield. That right there is a much better looking midfield than anything.
It is, but Pomacall's cheating a little bit. Let's. Who does he have? Does he have anyone besides Pomacall, or does he just have Pomacall listed there?
Well, he has backing up Pomacall, Parks and Amaya, backing up Williamson.
Okay, throw Keaton Parks on there for me.
Okay. Backing up Williamson, Bassett, Fontana, and Busio.
I don't need all of them. I just wasn't going to let Pomacall slide.
I'm going to read every single mother freaking name.
That'd be like saying if you just put Pulisic and McKennie in. I mean, he wasn't available. I need guys who are available that we could have called.
Okay, fair enough. And then he's got a back line that is not really all that encouraging to look at, but yeah, that midfield and that, especially Abobase up top, there's an argument to be made that that's a more pragmatic way to look at it. And we're going to go in and, like, you know, scratch out some victories with Abobase and set pieces and yada, yada, yada.
Okay. But can I I kind of don't want to just let it slide entirely, 'cause I like this idea, but it feels like Abobase and Williamson are sort of the only two guys in that group that would be like, oh, for sure, these guys would be successful against the actual group in Guadalajara. Like, I'm not sure Caden Clark and Cade Cowell are going to just tear a game up.
No, yeah.
And I love Keaton Parks, but
Cowell's got a long way to go. Yeah,
I'll take Sands. I would take Sands.
Yeah, Sands and Pomacall are both coming off long term injuries, but everybody else is coming off long term not playing soccer-ies. So I don't know. I don't know how much difference there is, but yeah, just something to think about. Let's talk about Costa Rica. You want to?
Okay.
Should we move on to that? So, like we said earlier, they're in the middle of the Clausura in their league, so the second half of the season. Everyone's in mid-season form. Four of the seven defenders come from one club, the aforementioned Alajuelense, and so they know how to play together. Should be cohesive. And their attacking options are pretty rich. I think, like, for a U23 side in CONCACAF, they got a lot of options.
Let me follow up on that defensive line. Alajuelense is the top team in the Costa Rican league, right?
Running away with it, yeah.
Okay, and so essentially they're running the I don't know if it's exactly first choice, but like four key defenders from the best team, Costa Rica.
Yeah, they all start in, you know, not every game, but I think Ian Smith plays right back. Well, let's read off the roster real quick. For defenders, they've got Jurgen Roman, Alexis Gamboa, Fernan Ferrone, Kevin Espinoza, Ian Smith, Aaron Salazar, and Luis Hernandez. So Roman, Gamboa, Ferran, and Smith are the Alajuelense quartet. And Smith plays right back. Roman plays left back. Gamboa and Ferran play center back for them. And there's other people in the rotation, but that's the basic mix there. And I don't know too much about Salazar and Hernandez and Espinoza. I know Espinoza is a center back. And Gamboa is a big left-footed young center back who I think is pretty promising for Costa Rica watchers. Any thoughts on those guys? Or?
Well, I wanted to just chime in here on like some generalities of the squad, just because a lot of times we use prior youth results to sort of be our gauge. So I was just doing a check on their group and who had appeared at the U20 qualifying tournament for Costa Rica. And I think only like 8 or 9 guys out of this group did. So that professional filter is sort of kicking in here. And so, you know, that's sort of the whole idea of when you get into these U23 groups, there's been more time to sort the players out. So I just mean, we shouldn't necessarily take those U20 results. Clearly, a lot of the guys that we have coming aren't our key U20 players either from the past two cycles.
Right.
But that's just something to keep in mind, is that our past success against them in U20s shouldn't necessarily shape how we're expecting to do against them this go around.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to pretend that I know a ton about these defenders. I just know what I've said, that they play together, that their club is like 8 points clear on the table, and they have plus 21 goal differential over the past 2 months. So they're just running, blowing through the league. The midfielders, from what I can tell from CRC Football, an account on Twitter who has a blog that I retweeted earlier today, he seems to know what he's talking about. He's been writing about Costa Rica for a long time. Definitely a fan, kind of like us, but maybe a little more of the one goal variety. Everything's roses all the time.
We're not that enthusiastic. We don't have that optimism.
I mean, I feel like, yeah, we mix it up a little bit more. But anyway, he's pretty optimistic about Costa Rica, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. But he sees Bernard Alfaro and Jefferson Brenes as the sort of double pivot midfielders. And then let's get into the attacking options, because I think they got a ton of wingers that look good. A couple of them will be familiar to MLS watchers. Randall Leal from Nashville FC was the lone attacking bright spot for that team in the season, I think. Didn't put up numbers for most of the year, but then broke out to help drive their playoff run with 3 goals, 4 assists in October and November. And he capped off his season with that banger from 25 yards against Inter Miami to key a rout in Nashville's first ever playoff win as a franchise.
So essentially, more than any of our attackers have contributed. Would that be fair to say in MLS?
Yeah, I think very fair to say, yeah. He looks good. I mean, Leal's a provider and a finisher. Seems pretty two-footed. The other MLS guy is Luis Diaz, who plays on the wing for the Crew. So he's an MLS Cup winner. Had an assist in the MLS Cup final. I think played pretty well throughout the playoffs. Dynamic, tricky. I'm not sure he's as high of an upside as Leal, but he's going to be dangerous for, you know, Araujo and Herrera to deal with out wide.
Right. We don't care about upside here with this coach. We care about how good they are this weekend, this Thursday. Yeah. That's all we care about.
I think they're going to be pretty good. Now, you could make the point, well, those two guys haven't played much lately either because they're both in MLS, and that's a good point. So, point taken. The other wingers are Jimmy Marin. That's Marin. From Saprissa, Deportivo Saprissa. I think, you know, he's producing for Saprissa in the league right now. Not quite as impressive to me as the other four that I've watched some clips of. But he's, I believe, left-footed, comes in from the right side. And that's true of the other two I'm going to mention here. Alonso Martinez from Alajuelense, 3 goals, 3 assists since the first of the year. A lot of that production's come in CONCACAF Champions League qualifiers. Again, he's a left-footed right winger, but he has a good right foot too. And then Gerson Torres, similar profile as Martinez and Marin. He's at Herediano. I would say give his left foot is cultured. Give him a yard with his left foot and within 25 yards of goal, and he will rip it. Very dangerous, tricky with the ball at his feet. Doesn't look like an incredibly good athlete, but he can get in, cut in from the left and have one, and he can get to the line and drop a cross in with his right foot. And all this talk of crossing is important because their probable starter at striker is Manfred Ugalde, who plays at Lommel's SK in the Belgian second division. He's on loan from Manchester City, City Football Group signing, loan army. He's not tall, but he's physical, and he has a really wide body and very good in the air. So he gets in and he like boxes people out and just nods the ball into the net. Scored his last 4 goals in league play by latching on to crosses. Kind of reminds me of a young Marco Arana a little bit. And I think he'll be a handful. And he does drop in deep, Jesus Ferreira style, on occasion and make things happen. Good in the press as well. The last striker is Jurgens Montenegro, who looks like a serviceable backup to Ugalde. He's at Alajuelense. Has scored 7 goals in the league this year, though 6 of them were in the Apertura.
So he's cooled off a little bit, we're hoping.
Yeah. He doesn't look as good as Ugalde. I think that's definitely the consensus. Ugalde is the superior player. And then goalkeepers are Adonis Pineda. I know I've played to type and totally messed up the order of operations here with the roster. But Adonis Pineda, Kevin Chamorro, and Patrick Sequeira. And Sequeira is at he's a Celta Vigo reserve. And I think they're a lot higher on him than the other two. He will not be available for the game against us, because he won't be released until the window opens. So we got that going for us.
All right. So what are Chamorro and Pineda's weaknesses that we can target?
I don't know. Come on.
distribution. No, I'm glad you dug into the Costa Rica roster, because as Matt Hartman pointed out, like basically our entire roster should have been designed to beat this team. Mexico is going to be a tall order for anyone to beat playing on home soil with a stacked team of mostly first choice players who are all playing in Liga MX, and then a few of their European guys who I think they've brought back. Is that what it is? Or is it just,
yeah, I think they've maybe brought back a couple, but they're missing, Lainez,
Edson Alvarez
and a couple others, you know, so they're missing 4 first choice U23s. So we're calling it an A- Mexico squad.
Right. But all those guys are in season and playing at home. So
yeah, as you said, cool.
Yeah. So you know, I think they are the prohibitive favorites. Not that you concede anything. You go in and you try to scrap for whatever you can get. But if you were mapping this tournament out, you would say we must beat Costa Rica. Our entire team should be geared towards beating Costa Rica.
Yeah. And maybe Jason Kreis is pulling all those strings behind the scenes. Who knows? But we don't know.
But again, I just want to say that it's good that this is good. Like, we shouldn't go in like knowing that we're going to beat someone. If we had our full strength team, I don't think there would be like a ton of worry. Even though, again, anything can happen in 90 minutes. If we had like our true full strength team, we'd be like, oh, this is awesome. We get to see him play. But there wouldn't be that sort of edge to it. Whereas now, like, we're like, are we favorites? Are we underdogs? Did Kreis actually pull in all these defensive players because he knows we're just going to sit back and grind out results in Guadalajara? I'm actually kind of excited for that reason.
Yeah, I'm excited because I think, you know, it's been instructive for me to look at this team and read about it, this Costa Rica team, and just remember the very obvious truth that we're not the only national team that's excited about their young players, you know? And it may be good for our young players to have their asses handed to them a little bit in this tournament and stop reading their own press clippings. And you know what I mean? I mean, not that anybody's specifically guilty of that. It's just like, I don't know that even if we brought a first choice team, this would be an easy match, you know, against Costa Rica. I think it'd be a tough, it's going to be a tough game no matter who we bring.
But again, that's what we want. And you know, we can say, well, all of our best players are gone and Costa Rica has all their best players, but Costa Rica doesn't have players playing in Europe that they needed to bring back. Like it's going to be kind of a measure of what can our domestic talent, youth talent do against Costa Rica's domestic youth talent. And I think that's still useful even for like measuring, you know, we're excited about all these 50 U23s a week playing in MLS last season. That's awesome. But how good are they really? Like, we don't actually know how good all of them are. We've seen a couple of them make big money moves, but I don't, you know, we don't know that Pineda is really ever going to be an option for us. When you look at this U23 roster we have, how many guys do you really expect to play a part in World Cup qualifying? This is going to be that chance for one or two or five of them to be like, no, I'm legit. Like, I'm not just filling out a roster on these MLS weekends with congested schedules. I can like make the difference in a tough game. And that's what I want to see happen.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to have a game with stakes to watch, you know? I mean, it might not be fun, honestly, but I think, I mean, I'm not an odds maker, but you have to think the most likely outcome is we don't get out of the group. That's my opinion, and I'm not saying it's yours. So we should downgrade our expectations. But, you know, it's kind of cool to be the underdogs. Like, let's be the underdogs. Let's go in and face this with clear eyes and try to get it done against what's going to be a well-oiled, hungry because they know they have to beat us just as we know they have to beat them. We have to beat them. And I think pretty talented side. I don't think it getting ugly for us is out of the realm of possibility, but I'm excited to see how it plays out.
All right. I'm not downgrading my expectations. I'm just eliminating the expectations altogether, because even though we're talking about these Costa Rica players all playing for the same club and all that, I still have no idea if they're actually good at that club or how good they are at that club. The same way. And I know this team is better than El Salvador, but El Salvador came into that friendly with a bunch of guys who all played on one club. So you're like, oh, well, they'll at least be organized. And then they came in and they were at, you know, a circus. So, like I have no real concept of how good the individual Costa Rica players are, and I also have no idea how good Sebastian Salcedo can be because he hasn't played in 10 months. So it's going to be very much like this, like complete unboxing of all these brand new things that I just don't know, and that is exciting, and I'm just not worked up about the big picture outcomes, and I don't think there will be any bigger message than, oh, this guy isn't very good. This guy was really good. And to be honest, again, my main focus is going to be on those guys, Jackson Ewell, Jesus Ferreira, Sam Vines, Johnny Cardoso, who we barely ever see play.
Yeah.
And who feel like they might be right on the edge of the senior team. Most people disagree about Ferreira with me. But, like, if Ewell can't do it in this game, if Ewell looks in these games, if he looks really out of place, we'll have to we probably will be reassessing his standing with the senior team.
Yeah, we're going to get information. We're going to get information. Yeah.
Even against Mexico, even because we're not just going to concede that game.
Yeah. Well, and if we do lose to Costa Rica and end up beating the Dominican Republic, then
it's all to play for.
Yeah, then it's going to be a real nail biter.
Also, we're putting all this emphasis on Costa Rica as like this must-win game, which I think we agree it is. Of course, we will then have this additional must-win game in the semifinal against whoever comes out of the other group. So it's not like it's just win this game and we're in. Win this game just to earn the chance to have another must-win game that we then have to perform again in. So, and we shouldn't also take Dominican Republic totally for granted. We still have to win that game in Guadalajara.
Yeah. I hope we can somewhat take it for granted, but yeah, we shouldn't. I think that's what we got. I guess one other thing I wanted to say is I want to see... I kind of brushed at this, but I want to see under Berhalter, a team come out unified and you know, cohesive. And I don't know, some people call it like winning culture. I saw somebody say that on Twitter. I think they were coming after you. We need to develop a winning culture. But I don't know if that's exactly the right terminology, but something like that, where we start to develop like a, okay, when we come into a tournament, we're gonna be somebody to reckon with. And maybe we will be that over the next couple weeks. Let's hope.
I'm all for it. I think you know me. I think that is based almost 95 to 100, 80 to 90% in the tactics. So if we want to come in with that attitude, you have to know what you're asking your players to do. They have to understand what they're being asked to do, and not just what they're doing, how it fits with the guy next to him and the guy behind him and in front of him. And so that cohesion comes from understanding of tactics. And that's the key here, is do we all understand what we're trying to do? And is it sort of in the realm of the correct ways to play?
Yeah.
Given the personnel.
Okay. Blessings upon you, Jason Kreiss. We'll record again early next week on the senior roster for the European friendlies. That's our plan, at least. And
time will tell if that's a preview or a reaction.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And then we'll be back a week from today to recap the Costa Rica match. And hopefully that famous American fighting spirit carries us through. Anything else we should mention, Greg?
That does it for this week.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you.